Welcome back. It is Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr here in the North Dakota Corn Council studio. If you've been listening, you know we're in Kansas City this week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Gathering. All our reports brought to you by ESN, the leading controlled-release granular nitrogen fertilizer in North America. We had a panel discussion in the afternoon, and it involved a group of people, a farm service agency administrator, an economist, and a farmer on how do we keep from repeating the 1980s. First up was David Shin. He is the Kansas Farm Service Agency Executive Director.
Some of the things we see is when we look at the programs in the 80s, we were based on the concept of a U.S. food security for that domestic stability. And, you know, all of that is still important. Today's farm programs are much more focused around producers and their ability to manage their operations and adapt what they're growing for our exports and to facilitate marketing opportunities for their operations. Some of the things that we look at when we look at changes between then and now is the transition from the crop allotment to our bases, looking at it from the aspect that if you had a cotton allotment in the 80s, you planted cotton in order to get a program payment, to today where we give that producer the flexibility and allow them to be able to choose and respond to market conditions that we have out there. We've gone from a supply management tool to a revenue or price support model. You know, we used to have the old pick and roll. Today what do we have? We have the ARC and PLC programs that allow producers to manage those risks and adapt to the situations on their farms when they look at either revenue risks or yield risks and price risks. We've transitioned from government-controlled production into producer-controlled production. I can still remember crawling onto a tractor and driving out into a wheat field and destroying 20 acres of beautiful wheat growing out there because we were over our wheat base. But we don't have that anymore. When we continue to look on, we look at what we have now as well as with disaster programs. We looked back at then at ad hoc disaster programs. Today, with much more permanent disaster programs, especially when we start to look around our livestock producers and the minimal support programs they have to programs today such as LFP, Livestock Forage Program, or Livestock Indemnity Program, or ELAP programs. Again, flexibility for the producers to be able to manage the risks and disaster situations when they truly face. We have also transitioned from programs that have been focused around limiting our production to much more focused upon conservation when we look at our CRP programs and expanding those programs there. So when I look at where we are at today in ag compared to the 80s and how do we avoid repeating them, what I look at is today with our farm policies and programs, we have a flexibility in them that allows our producers to do best what they have done for so many years, and that's called adapt to the challenges they face, whether it's developing a plow that allows them to bust out sod or developing conservation practices to handle a dust bowl or even today in dealing with ARC and PLC and having that ability to adapt to the challenges of the market and conditions that they grow in. We have programs now that have allowed them to truly be adaptable and to manage that risk with those programs they have.
Dale Dirkholtz of Grain Cycles gave his analysis of how do we not repeat the 80s.
It's a lot different than it was then. Yes, farm programs are a lot different than we had back then. And part of the 85 Farm Bill, there was one ingredient policy-wise that really lifted us out of the lows that we had back in the middle 1980s. Anybody got an idea out there what that was? Three letters, CRP. We took 30 million acres out of production in a span of about 3 years, and that really lifted us out of the problems we had back then. But here today, I'm sitting here going, do we have the wherewithal in Washington to do that again? Probably not. But more important than that, do they have the wherewithal to do that in Brazil? Do they have the wherewithal to do that in Russia or Ukraine or in Argentina? Are they going to put policies in place to pull acreage back? And I would say I doubt it. And it'll be easy to get back into overproduction. You know, I go back in 1983. We took 75 billion acres out of production in 1973 in the U.S. That was when you could buy whole farms out. Most of it went back in the next year, and by 1987, we had nearby corn futures at $1.42. Things settled down. Yeah, we still had set-aside. We tried to manage production. We finally gave up on that, and that proved to be a disaster, and we ended up with those extraordinarily low commodity prices again. Then we burst CRP, and along we go, and things got a little bit better. 90s, we're seeing things reasonably good, and then all of a sudden demand finally around the world caught up with supply, and we had the big surge of things that culminated with the highs we had back in 2010, 11, 12, 13. But here we are again today. And I've seen some people look at some numbers out there and are starting to project out. Ending stocks on corn, close to 3 billion bushel. If we have good crops, weak demand. That didn't bode well for me. And you know, when I step back and I look at this, I think not only of how all of this is going to impact the farmer. I look at rural community, and I threw people in the Farm Bureau, both in Illinois and Iowa. I was pushing them hard to raise loan rates because that's still a bottom line economic variable, not only for a farmer, but as I see it, the rural community. And they weenied out on me. They went from $1.95 on corn to $2.20 in the new bill. Beans went $5 to $6.20. Wheat, we went from $2.94 to $3.38. Now I ask you, what do you think the economic hit would be if we have commodity prices go to that level?
Dale Dirkholz with some dire predictions there. All right, let's get a little more optimistic here with a Missouri farmer, Garrett Rieckhoff. He farms in central Missouri. He's 38 years old.
Back in the 80s, I'm not sure that any of my father's peers successfully hired an agronomist that could teach them, you know, you've got mites under those soybean leaves. You know, my dad didn't carry around, you know, a jeweler's eyeglass, if you will. That's commonplace in anybody's scouting toolbox now. You know, we've learned so much from probably originating from the universities, but hiring a professional agronomist in this operation is something that also keeps us from, you know, slipping backward too far with an infestation or slipping back too far with a genetic set that's not worthy. Working with accountants, you know, we can manage. We're doing estimated taxes. We're doing things on a business side, disregard that we're producing anything. We're a business also, as you all know. We're doing things with our professional team, our accountants, that are keeping us liquid. They're keeping us tax savvy. And those professional networks, we also have, you know, we have numerous programs now that are commonplace to do analytics. I'm not aware that my dad had an Apple IIe, you know, with the green screen. He would carry that sucker in a box over to this farming partner of his. And he didn't have a flash drive, a thumb drive. He would carry that thing, and they'd put these two Apple IIe's up next to each other like a couple of dorks. And they just typed away. I had no idea what they were doing, but they were crunching numbers on an Apple IIe computer. And that's part of the reason why I'm sitting before you is he was very analytically minded. He crunched numbers to the nth degree, and he made it. But most farmers, I guarantee his age, weren't using an Apple IIe, and he speaks to me about his harebrained idea of going to the bank and asking for a loan for that computer. I mean, who of us go to take a loan for a laptop these days? But he did. I mean, we'll go buy them, you know, they're just $1,000. But in the grand scheme of things, that's nothing compared to what it was in his day. The analytical power that I have using GIS software, using, you know, whether that be Conservice or Granular or many of these cloud-based analytical services, they help me get the margin out of my business that I don't think a farmer in the 80s ever thought possible. I didn't think it 10 years ago that it was as possible as it is now. And it's available to the masses. You know, pay the subscription, you've got the service. Garbage in, garbage out. Success in, success out. I think you alluded to it a little bit, Dale, of creative technology, so I won't drone on much about this, but we have some extremely creative technologies. My charge as a grower is to pick the correct one. The problem with having so many technologies is that most of them are a flop. It is extremely hard for me to pick the correct ones and diagnose which one's good this year and the next, because a lot of them were good this last year, but the year before probably wouldn't have been worth a darn. It is an extremely hard game, but I have access to many of those new creative technologies. We have no-till, and that was alluded to. That seems super simple. But I'm talking to you guys now about this notion of weatherproofing your crop. it's something I think of very commonly now, and it's kind of these cliche, but you want to weatherproof your crop. So I think many of these attachments we can put do in-season fertility. We can do no-till. We don't till the ground. We do just-in-time aerial application is much more common. So do things that weatherproof your crop. Those things were not being done when my dad was my age.
There you have three perspectives on how do we avoid a repeat of the 80s financial crisis in agriculture.